right, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of The Blind Side Blitz. I am Jim McPhee, and of course, alongside of me is Mr. Joe DiCapita.
What's going on, Blitz Nation? You know what time it is. It's time to get your football dose for the week. Quite honestly, you can do a simple thing for us. Head over to our website, grumblingsmedia.com. Head over there. You can check out all the great podcasts like ours. Political, entertainment, and other sports are there as well. Also, head over to YouTube. Make sure you hit that subscribe button. That's right. While you're there, thumbs up, drop comments down below. Let us know that you're here. We are live, everybody. Make sure you drop your questions, your comments, your opinions, anything that we're talking about. We are here for you guys. And also, you can head over to rumble.com. Make sure you drop a follow there, maybe a little bit of a review. And you, of course, you can take us on the go and be in the know with our podcasts. iTunes, Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora, you name it, we're there as well.
All right, way to go, Joe. Absolutely. And we are talking about the AFC West a little bit later, but Joe, we have a very special guest with
us
tonight.
Actually, yes, sir.
This guy actually wrote the book on fantasy sports. How about
that?
So you can't get any better than that, than have somebody like this here with us here. Here we go. And none other than Larry Schechter is joining us. Larry, pleasure to have you on here.
Great to be here, guys.
All right. Now, first, you know, the name of the book that you have is The History of Fantasy Sports. Before we get into that, though, I did find out that you are a Schenectady native, and now you actually live down the road from me, actually, like 5 to 10 minutes right now.
Really?
In Rexford, yeah. Yeah, I live in Glenville right now. So that is some amazing news.
I didn't know. I also lived in Rexford.
Wow, absolutely.
I lived in Rexford the last several years, and I lived in Clifton Park for a year.
Wow, in Clifton Park, absolutely. Wow, so I didn't even know that. You were a Schenectady native. So that's big news. I think that's pretty awesome. And then you moved away to go to college, to Boston College, and I was reading that you vowed to never come back, but what actually brought you back to Schenectady?
Yeah, I vowed never to come back to Schenectady, but, you know, about 12 years later, when I was 30 or so, I went back and moved to Florida about 9 years ago. So next time I'm up in the Schenectady area, we'll go up for a beer.
Nice. Awesome. Go. Very cool. Cool.
Or a hot chocolate if it's the winter.
Nice. Yes, exactly. Right.
Yeah. It's pretty cold here. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So like I said, the name of the book is The History of Fantasy Sports. And, all right, so when you were writing this book, what kind of inspired you to start looking into this and getting the stories together to write this book?
Well, I've known for many years that somebody needed to write a book like this because, you know, I've played fantasy sports since about 1990. I've been in two of the biggest baseball experts leagues, Pet Wars and Labor. And so I know some of the people that were involved in various aspects of the industry, but I didn't really have any idea how it all started. I mean, I would look at the industry as, you know, yet a multi-billion-dollar industry, millions and millions of people playing fantasy sports all over the world, everything from baseball and football to fantasy Iditarod, NASCAR, wakeboarding, you know, everything. And you got news services and stat services and podcasts and experts and Sirius XM radio, Fantasy Channel. I mean, this whole thing. I'm like, where did this come from? Like, how did we go from some idea that some people had years ago to this, you know, humongous industry? So I just had this idea that, you know, somebody should write a book like this because it's needed. And I decided to write it. And I thought it was something that I could knock out in a few months. I thought it would be pretty easy to get the information. Oh, my God, was I ever wrong? It took forever. I spent like 18 months of incredible work, research, Googling everything, reading article after article. I interviewed dozens of people, most of them over Zoom, some at, you know, great length, like, you know, some of the big people in the industry and other aspects of sports, like, you know, Clay Walker, the head of the NFLPA for a while, Bill Topaz, who was the general manager of Sporting News, Mike Levy, who started CBS Sportsline. I mean, I interviewed like everybody, you know, some of these big shots, you know, Dan Okrent, who's credited with inventing fantasy baseball, I interviewed some of these really, you know, well-known big shots and down to somebody who maybe was in an APA baseball league or Stratomatic baseball league. that mm-hmm. there was something interesting about. And when I, you know, when I started, you know, the name of the book was going to be The History of Fantasy Sports, as you just said.
Mm-hmm.
But as I started to get into it and research and talk to people and read things, I realized that what I could do is I could just write the facts and figures and the history, and I'd have all the information, but it would come off like a very boring research paper.
Mm-hmm.
And see, but I started to find out fascinating things about people and what they had done. And that's where I got the subtitle of the book. The subtitle of the book is In the Stories of the People Who Made It Happen. Because that's what has made the book fascinating, interesting, easy to read, a lot of humor, some things that are inspirational, a few things that'll bring a tear to your eye. And, you know, so the book turned out great. And I'm not saying that, you know, like I don't want to sound arrogant, like I'm bragging. It's not because I wrote something brilliant. It's because the stories of the people are amazing. And the reviews so far, the editorial reviews and the reviews by, you know, like Amazon, Barnes & Noble customers are great. And, you know, everybody's saying this is fascinating. It's easier to read. I couldn't put it down. If you love fantasy sports, you're going to love the book. If you're a content creator in fantasy sports, you know, you absolutely have to read it. And there's never been anything like it, and there never will be anything like it.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. And 18 months of gathering information and data and stories.
It's a lot of Zoom meetings.
No kidding, right? There's many stories throughout the book, The History of Fantasy Sports, for everybody out there. Is there a story you could share with us possibly that about some of the people that who helped make this book possible?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's, you know, dozens and dozens of stories.
Right.
You know, some of the people I interviewed for like hours and hours, like Paul Charchian. Okay. Paul Charchian, who has been very involved in the industry in different things, and he was the president of the Fantasy Sports Trade Association for 11 years. Mm-hmm. And I interviewed him for like 3 hours, you know, not all at once, like in pieces. Like Greg Ambosius, Rick Wolf, Dan Okra. I mean, some of these people I interviewed like 2 or 3 hours. You know, and then follow up emails. I'm sure some of these people were sick of hearing from me. yeah.
Was there something that you like in your research that you thought you might have known, but then talking to someone, you know, like all of a sudden, like, wow, I was unaware of that. Wow, holy moly! And you like kind of opened up like something that you've never seen before or heard before.
Yeah, well, I didn't know most of this information, and not only like nobody knew most of this information. Paul Charchian, I just referred to Paul Charchian. Now he's been in the industry his entire life. He was even the head of the FSTA for 11 years. He read the book and he said, I didn't know most of this.
You know,
I didn't know most of this. I was enlightened by all your stories and interviews. You know, it's like people just don't know any of this. And like, I actually, you know, when I was done with the book, I actually had made myself the world's leading expert in fantasy sports history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not too many people can say, like, you're the world's leading expert in something. I made myself the world's leading expert. Now people who read the book, you know, they're, like, in second place.
Yeah, that's right.
Read the book, you'll be tied for second place in the leading expert.
Right.
I know a little bit more because there's some things that didn't make it into the book. You know, I mean, you know, there wasn't room for everything. In fact, in the beginning of the book, I say this is like choosing an all-star team. There's not going to be enough room for everybody, you know, that should be in here every event. So it's like I apologize to the, you know, the people or events that should have been mentioned, but there just wasn't room.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, some of the ones that didn't make it out, are you going to save that for something going on further? Like the stories that, you know, you maybe might not have known, you know, like kind of a B cuts, I guess, or something? Or
probably not.
No.
I'm going to need a long vacation.
I went
from all this incredible massive research and writing that was just like a full-time job for 18 months, and now I've kind of transitioned to, now that it's out, you know, I've got to do a lot of work to publicize it and get the word out, because if I don't do it, nobody's going to do it for me.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, Joe, we've got our first comment of the night here.
Oh, okay.
Join us watching is William Del Pilar. Here he is. He says, not to toot my own horn, but I knew a lot of it, wink, wink. So there you go.
Well, he's like the first one.
Okay. Yes, there you go.
But I'm gonna challenge him. I'll bet if I go over the book point by point and say, now, did you really know about this?
Yes.
He did not.
Right, we'll have to do like maybe a Jeopardy or something like that together. Who busts it first? You know, they have it or something. That would be funny. In doing my research too on you, I've looked and saw that you are the only 2-time winner of the CDM Sports National Salary Cap Challenge. That said that you competed with over 7,500 one year, then 6,000 another. What does that pertain to? Especially what is that national salary cap now? Is that like what they call like a dynasty league now or something, or is that what is that?
No, it's a fantasy baseball league. Fantasy baseball, you have formats like a snake draft, auction league. Salary cap is a format of fantasy baseball where you pick players, they're assigned a salary. You have to have a roster under a salary cap. You know, it's kind of like a lot of daily fantasy sports are set up that way now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I also saw that you also wrote a book early on in, like, 2014 about winning fantasy baseball. I see that you're a big baseball fan. You love the Red Sox. We are Yankees fans over here, but we won't hold that against you. How much in that book do you pertain like the same strategy towards fantasy football, or is it like a two different type of strategies going into it?
Well, I mean, that book was all about fantasy baseball, but a lot of the strategy applies to football and other fantasy sports.
Do you by chance have any tips of the trade for any of these fantasy fanatics that are out there, regardless of what sport that they're involved with?
Well, you know, one is putting in work. You know, it's like it's time consuming to do it. To do it well, it really does take time. Baseball and football are a little different. One thing that's a lot easier with football is like all points. You know, like you get 6 points for a touchdown and, you know, 1 point for 10 yards rushing or whatever. It's all easy to add up. So if you project a player to have certain statistics, it's easy to figure out exactly how many points it's going to be worth. Whereas baseball, you have some leagues or point style like that, but a lot of baseball is rotisserie style where you're not getting points for what they do. You're putting things into categories and ranking teams. And so for that, creating a value form is a lot more complicated.
I can see.
You know, in my book, Winning Fantasy Baseball, there's a chapter about how to do a value formula because you need to, for baseball, you need to have a specific value. Or for any sport, basketball, whatever, you've got to have a specific value to know what a player is worth in an auction or where you should draft them in a draft.
Mm-hmm. Do you have I guess you said that, you know, there's similar in strategies, but say if you look at football now, we see the way certain positions are valued more, especially now fantasy wise. You know, a lot of people want to go heavy wide receivers or whatnot. You know, and now the running backs aren't so much quarterbacks. You know, where you have a certain strategy of where you see some of these positions like quarterbacks dropping down further on in your draft?
Well, it comes back to starting with value. You know, you project what you think a player is going to do. Statistically, and what's that value going to be? How many points are they going to get, or what are they worth? You know, like in a baseball auction. And then it's a question of, you know, where can you get them in a draft? I'll look at the ADP and I'll kind of map out where players are going to be available and figure out, you know, what my best strategy is.
Yeah. So basically, like you're like everybody, if you do your homework. And then you also have your own projection of each player. You can, you know, determine what the value is for what round.
Yeah. And actually, you know, I'm talking tonight about my new book, but, you know, if you go back to Winning Fantasy Baseball, it's like if you read that book, you know, mm-hmm. for base for baseball. It tells you everything you need to know for whatever format. And as a lot of it applies to football or other sports. Mm-hmm. You know, like there's a chapter on snake drafts, which say the same thing applies, whether it's a snake draft for football or basketball or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Going back to the book, what would you say the golden age, if you will, of fantasy sports was or is at what time period, like when it just finally blew up?
Well, it blew up. I mean, it blew up with the internet was the biggest thing. You know, with the advent of computers and the internet, it just made it a lot easier for people to play. It made it a lot easier for people to, you know, find out about the game. Before that, people had to do statistics by hand. So if you were in a fantasy baseball league, what you would do is you would wait to get the newspaper the next day and write all the statistics from the box score by hand. Or you'd wait for the USA Today started publishing American League statistics on Monday, on Tuesday, National League statistics on Wednesday. So the commissioner of the league, they'd have to spend like 8 hours or whatever every week going through the paper or the USA Today, writing all the statistics, figuring it all out. It was a lot of work. And then, you know, when computers started to come around, some people would say, oh, you know, I can do this on a computer. And what happened, like the book, my book, it's not so much about fantasy sports as it is about entrepreneurs and creating an industry and the stories mm-hmm. of what these people did. Mm-hmm. And, you know, for the most part, all these people, they saw a need and they filled it. Like, you know, they would say like, gee, I know how to do a computer. You know, I could do stats by computer and offer it as a service so people don't have to do it by hand. And other people would say, people like fantasy football, and there's like very little information about it. I think I'll start a magazine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then everything that we have now, somebody saw something that was needed and fulfilled it. And you know, like and my book has chapters about all these different things. Like it starts out in you know, some of the chapters starts in the beginning, then origins of fantasy baseball, origins of fantasy football, the first commercial games, newspaper games, legal issues, experts leagues, injury experts, innovative entrepreneurs, daily fantasy sports, the Fantasy Sports Trade Association. And it's like everything has a chapter.
Wow. Very in-depth, to say the
least. Yes, absolutely. We've got a comment from Back to the Stone Ages with us. He says, fantasy football is like dying a death of 1,000 cuts. Do you agree? Do you agree with that?
You know, if it's not going well, yeah.
But you don't know what that's about, though, right?
It's a long season. I mean, yeah. Really hitting home right now what a long season it is.
Right. All right, so when you're traditionally setting up and gearing up for this season, how many leagues do, or even if you do it still or not, but how many leagues would you usually be in at the same time?
Well, in recent years, I've been in about 5 to 7 baseball leagues and about 5 to 7 football leagues. Wow. I used to do fantasy basketball, but I haven't done that in a long time.
Wow, that's interesting. That's a lot of busy. Like I used to do fantasy sports, and I was just done with the heartache. Like I get there, I was like always the bridesmaid, never the bride. You know what I mean? I get there far into the playoffs, and then my team would just bleh. So yeah. I can't take the stress anymore.
I mean, what I do is kind of tame compared to a lot of people. I mean, there are a lot of people that are like in 15, 20, 30 leagues. I mean, you know, mm-hmm. that's a lot. And then, you know, some people are doing daily sport, you know, daily fantasy or yep. leagues that have daily moves. And like, that's a lot, you know, every day.
It is a lot.
Yeah.
So when you look at fantasy sports, then, do you think baseball is like a good jump off spot to get into? Or do you think, or football maybe, because it's easier, but then people can grow into baseball? If somebody's looking at fantasy sports, would you say recommend to somebody like, hey, you're looking to get into this? And it happened to even be profitable for yourself. What do you kind of give for advice?
Well, whatever somebody likes. You know, if you like football, play football. If you like baseball or hockey or soccer, whatever whatever you like, you know, play that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The name of the book is The History of Fantasy Sports and the Stories of the People Who Made It Happen. We are talking to Larry Schechter. Larry, it's been a pleasure talking to you. We really appreciate all the insight you've given us. I can't wait to read the book myself. Like I told you before we started, I'm going camping this weekend.
That's right.
I can't stand camping, so I will be zipping myself in the tent away from the bugs and everything and snuggling up with this book, and I'm really going to enjoy the stories.
All right. And I should mention the book is available at Amazon and most major online booksellers. It's available paperback and ebook.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
Larry. And we hope to talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks. Thanks again.
I thank you.
Have a good one.
There he is, ladies and gentlemen, Larry Schechter, author of the History of Fantasy Sports and the Stories of the People Who Made It Happen. You guys have to check out this book. Go to Amazon.com. You can purchase it there. You can get it either paperback, but you can also get it digital for your Kindles too as well.
So yeah, right away on Amazon.
Check it out right there. I can't wait to read it, like I said, Joe. And we talked a little bit about the fantasy football, baseball, a little bit of, you know, strategy, but then also a little bit about the book too as well. I didn't want him to pour on too much give it all away, because again, I don't want him to give me spoilers either. You know what I mean? When you asked about the stories, I'm like, oh man, I wonder what he's going to say or what is it, you know.
But I was kind of hoping, because then, you know, that way it might spark a big amount of interest with people that are watching. Mm-hmm. They'd be like, oh wow, I didn't know that. Now I'm going to go buy the book. You know, mm-hmm. So, but it was cool anyway. Great interview. I'll tell you one thing. Just from looking at, I looked at and read chapter 3 of the book, because that's all they were willing to show me.
Oh, really?
Like a preview.
It's just a teaser.
And let me tell you this: it is chock full of information. Like when we briefly touched on like how detailed the book was, that's not even half of it. One chapter. I found out so much about the history of how fantasy sports, or even football and baseball combined, how they both started literally in front offices. Like it wasn't even like it was a group of guys that kind of started to get together and talk about this, like, oh, let's figure out a new game or something to keep it entertaining. And it just kind of grew from there. And then it grew into like the front offices of the NFL and baseball personnel, and they started to really, and it just bloomed from there. And then, and once, just like Larry Schechter said, once it hit internet, it just blew up the whole thing. Like it became extremely easy to send information and get information, you know, to keep track of the data that we utilized for our leagues and everything. I can only imagine, like he was touching on, about how difficult it was, where you had to wait for the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And you get the newspaper, and the commissioner had to go through and spend so much time on figuring out points and who won and who beat who and keep the standings and all of that. And now, you fast forward now it's so much simpler in terms of keeping track of everything because of computers. So truly amazing, well detailed. And I'll tell you right now, just a little bit that I read, I definitely recommend it. If you're a football or baseball nut or just love fantasy altogether, this is a book where it can educate you on where it came from and give you like very detailed stories and information of just the everyday aspects of fantasy and how it grew to what it is today.
There you go. There's the book. Like I said, you can get it on Amazon.com. Check it out. It's a good read. I'm excited to check it out. And like you said, the stories, man, like that, and where it kind of all evolved.
No,
really, not even where it began, but where it evolved. Because we, like Joe, it sucks. We're old enough to know even a lot of these different things where we're looking at stuff on paper, and now it's all digital now. You know what I mean? We're getting to that spot. So and that's why I always find interesting. I'm going to give a shout-out to ProFootballReference.com because I love those guys.
Yes.
And I admire the hard work that has to go into keeping all those stats and generating all out there, and not even just, it's not like NFL affiliated with the NFL. These guys decided to just do the stats, and they give you all different types of things, you know what I mean, analytics that you wouldn't even think of. And somebody's crunching all that and putting it out there, and that's our go-to. So a shout-out to those guys. And, I mean, it's just amazing to see that type of stuff happen. We've got William Del Pilar's in the house, and he says, bring me on, and I'll tell you a story if you want. William, come on, man. We've got the link here. You know where it is. Join the show. We'll bring you on. Tell us a story. We want to hear some of these. William, as you, some of you guys don't know, a pioneer in the fantasy genre as well, too. So, I mean,
it's big.
An expert. Yeah, absolutely. Again, I think I kind of entered it where I thought it was even like kind of the pinnacle for me, where I was like, oh, wow, yeah, fantasy football. I'm getting into this now. Right. And it's even since then just erupted. So here he is now. I'm going to add him to the stage. Huge. I hope he's ready. But it's William Del Pilar. William, what's up, buddy?
Hey, can you guys hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you.
There we go. I'm going to talk to Larry, say, hey, to sell the book, you got to tell some stories, you know?
Yeah.
It's funny you mentioned the Pro Football Reference guys. And for the record, I just got through working out. I was all hot and sweaty, and I'm like, you got to press him. Ask him some questions on the stories. That's what made up the industry in the beginning. In the very beginning, that's not true. When the internet first started, because fantasy had been like you guys were saying, USA Today was the Bible of fantasy sports. Every Wednesday and Thursday, they had the AFC and then the NFC notes, and then you got the box scores. And the guy who was it? Death by a Thousand Cuts. Yeah, he's right. Yeah, yeah. That's because fantasy baseball is such a long season, you know. And I had never played it. I played it. I dominated because I realized people can't keep up with it every day, and it was my job. So I was out there every day, you know. So, but one of the stories, my company was KFFL.com. You know, I was a fantasy nut, playing fantasy. I was a commissioner of the league. I was the guy who went and bought the $700 inkjet color printer when they first came out in the 90s to print out the newsletters. I would, you know, print out the newsletter, put them in the mail. They loved me. So then, you know, I was a returning college student, meaning I was in the military, got out, and I was like, I don't want to dig ditches my whole life. So I went to college, you know, and in the computer room, I discovered something called Netscape, and it was the browser, you know, and then I was like, oh my God, you know, the first thing I thought of was fantasy football. And then, you know, I was a full-time student working full-time and managing my fantasy league. And I had my wife now 30 years, my girlfriend at the time. And, she just got mad at me one night. Why don't you figure out how to make some money? Cause I was spending more time with that than I was with her. And boom, it clicked. I gathered some people up. We started a company and and they were called Roto World at the time. We were the first company to do the player news. Now, I'm not knocking Roto World, but I'm going to cut to the chase. They would post 10, 20 notes a day on players. We were like 60, 75. If that water boy passed gas at the 50-yard line, we were reporting it. Before I knew it, general managers, players, agents started calling us. They loved us because I don't know how old you guys were back then, but that was the era of stealing content, meaning Mike Florio, and I hope he sees this. He was one of the first ones with NFL Talk. They would take press releases. My insiders are telling me. Your insiders aren't telling you squat, you know? So we actually sourced everybody. We sourced all the reporters. Before you knew it, I had a reporter in every locker room because they loved the fact we were honest. And I'm like, we're not insiders. We're just regurgitating the news. You know, we were the guys who were the first ones to go to the bottom paragraph at that news story. But the bottom paragraph was all I cared about because that they would tell us who didn't and who did practice, you know. But one of the stories, so my company got big real quick. My website was ranked in the top 2,000 of the world. Now, this was in the 1990s. It's obviously there's billions more websites now. Mm-hmm. But we owned the player market, Yahoo, CBS Sports, Fox Sports. We had the contract on all player news out there. We were the NFL Network's first fantasy analyst. I kind of pissed that away. You know, they came to me. It was like a Tuesday, Thanksgiving week. And I'm very protective of my guys. And they said, look, we need you guys to come up Thursday. Episode. I was like, are you freaking high? I'm killing myself right now to get our content out for, you know, the Thursday game. So I said, no, they never called us after that, you know? So being pretend, that maybe was one of the decisions that maybe wasn't my wisest, but I helped convince Michael Florio to take the gig over there. So I was pretty proud. But one of the stories that I have is we were it was an Indian resort. It was Chicago. Krause Publications put on the first trade associations. It was called the Fantasy Sports Players Association, if I remember correctly. I should know this. I was on the board.
It was a crazy time.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm not going to get into that, but we were literally a TV movie and how we partied, but worked hard at the same time. And I'm prideful, but yet I don't want to tell those stories, you know? So we're all lit. Because what happened, there were about 30 of us at the trade association, you know, and then so after all the day's events, we all got together at the bar, you know, and we're all drinking. And I won't say who it is, but he's still dominant in the industry. And it turns out I like him, good guy, arrogant. There were just like politics, there were the elites and the scrubs, and I was part of the scrubs, the mom and pop, and the elites being the big conglomerates, the Yahoos, the sports lines, the ESPNs, the ESPN. So he was hammered, and my company was starting to rise up the ranks with the Player News. That was our flagship, and he just blatantly said, you know, William, we're just watching what you do. We have people who watch your site, and we're just going to copy and take everything from you, and that's that. And he was lit, you know? Yeah. So I know he was telling the truth. And it was a combination of anger and, man, we are good, aren't we, you know?
Right.
And another story is, this one here will blow your mind. So they would hold it in Chicago, and they always purposely held it when there was a Bears preseason game, because it was in the summer. So I remember Emo Cadillac, and he's one of the godfathers of the industry. He and I, and I can't remember who else. I don't know if Adam Kaplan was with us at that point, if we met him at the game. So we're at the game, and, you know, we're in the stands somewhere in the middle, you know, and just by chance, we see Chris Spielman, the general manager of the Miami Dolphins, some rows down, you know, and I wouldn't be able to recognize him from a hole in the wall, but Adam was, he was just dying to be an insider. I mean, that was his orgasmic fantasy, to be an insider, you know, and we all started at the same time, us, Jay Glazer, Steve Cohen, WFAN, and so he recognizes him, and he goes down there, and he talks to him, and it was after the game, so he brings him up, and Adam is talking to him, and Adam is very protective. Adam was just a selfish son of a bitch, you know, to be honest, but we loved Adam, you know, because we all started at the same time, so we were helping each other. So eventually he grudgingly goes, yeah, this is Emo Cadillac he does fantasy, the fantasy magazines. If you play fantasy football, you have bought one of his magazines, Football Die Hard, Pro Forecast, and a couple others. Then he goes, and this is William Del Pilar of KFFL. And then he didn't even finish KFFL before Spielman shouts out, hot off the wire, and he just started grilling me. It became Emo and Adam were, I mean, they were like, didn't exist. Spielman was just grilling me. You know, and the reason I'm so happy by this, because look, I'm an average Joe. I make fun of Joe because he's a big bouncer. Now I'm a 5'7" Latino, you know, and when I go back to Panama, I'm about an inch taller than most, so I'm a big guy down there, you know. So,
yeah, big deal.
You know, if I can do it, anybody can do it, you know. And so we went to the Senior Bowl. These are other tales. I started to go, I had my big KFFL shirt. And Dave McGinnis, head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, hollers out KFFL. I walk up to Marvin Lewis. They go, hey, Coach Lewis, I know who you are. So we got front row seats to interview Carlson Palmer. I mean, we were living large. Mm-hmm. You know, now we weren't living large financially. I mean, but we were living large. Yeah, exactly. It was a fun event because we all came up together, you know. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because when I sold the company, I said, yeah, I'm going to stay in the industry, man. It's what I do best. And then I realized what I loved was what I built. And my partner was like, oh, no, I don't like that. I'm going to get out of the industry. Well, he's still in the industry. And I'm in the industry.
Oh, man. You know?
This is Grumbling's Media, and there's Big John. That's how I met Big John. When I went online first, I discovered Gridiron Grumblings, and that was John Jadropoulos' site. And he was every other site I went to. I can do it better. I can do it better. I can do it better. And I did do it better. Yeah. You know? Then I saw John's site. I'm like, damn, this guy's good. I'm like, man, he's got a radio. They didn't call it podcasting back then. You know, it was internet radio, and he had a radio show. He had innovative articles. Now he and I have gotten into a couple of times. I'm like, you know, there's fantasy and there's innovativeness. Sometimes you gotta, you know, as Marie Antoinette said, give him cake. You know, gotta give the fans a cake, and they wanted pure fantasy. But he was so innovative in what he did. And ever since that day, I never partnered with him. I never did anything, but he was the only guy who I really wanted to go work with, you know? Mm-hmm. And look, over 20 years later, and he rebuffed me a couple years ago when I said, hey, John, let's do this. Nah, I got my own thing going. I'm like, okay. I'll give you a call in a year from now. And sure enough, a year later, I'm just right there. Kind of a little jab. He's 6'4". I don't want him to take it out on me. But, you know, there's so many stories. And, that, you know, Larry was I'll talk to Larry, but that was a tough story. I mean, he was a tough interview. He's very serious, you can tell, you know. Yeah. But he's got to get out with some of these stories there. I mean, and Stefania Bell, I gave her start. She was ready to leave the industry. Now she's a big wig at ESPN. One of our guys is, and I'm not going to say his name because he's never really given me permission to say it or not that, but he's like middle management now, and for a grunt, for an intern with an NFL team, you know? So my company helps spawn a lot of people to go off and do other things. And it's just a fun industry in the beginning because we partied hard because, you know, I had just left the military. I was the older guy in my late 20s and going to my early 30s. I had 20, 21 year olds. But I'll say this about technology and the internet and the negative side. Yeah. One day I walked out of the office and I looked at all these kids working for me, and they were at that point in their late 20s. I was in my 32, 33. I was getting ready to hit my, I was married already, you know, settled down. Yeah. And I looked at them. I was like, oh my God. These guys, their whole life, it's nothing but not even texting, really. It was instant messenger, AOL Messenger, and ICQ were the big ones of the day. ICQ was an Israeli created product that was uber popular, and I don't know who bought them out. And then obviously, I don't know if you guys remember, but AOL Messenger was the big messenger.
Yeah, big time, absolutely.
And then I looked at them and I was like, these guys have no social life. They don't know how to talk to people, to women. And that's when I was like, oh my God, we're screwed. They were the nicest guys. I'm like, and being the guy, and I'm married now 30 years, but looking back, I'm like, oh dear God, by the time I was their age, I had built about 20 harems just being a sailor and a beer and traveling the world. I was like, these guys don't even know how to say hello to a woman. And I wasn't saying that to mock them. I was saying that because I love my guys. I was like, you guys got to get out. You got to have a social life. So for you fantasy people today, do not forget to get off the computer and go talk to people because that's what's fulfilling. For as much as I love doing that, and that was a big part of my life, some days I'm like, oh my God, I got to get behind from this computer and head on out. But anyway, you guys have a show to do. I don't want to take up more of your time. There's a couple of stories, and it was a fun time, a fun industry. And you know what? It's not like it was today. We all rooted for each other. You know, we all rooted for each other. Oh, I got one more story to tell you. You got to listen.
Before you get into another one, I just want to say that John's here watching us too as well. And he said that Florio had started Pro Football Talk after listening to his podcast. The one you had talked about is the Gridiron Grumblings Radio, and it followed me around like a puppy in 1999 draft. Good times. And then he also said that it's okay. You also stole some stuff from him from his website too, as well. So there.
No. What John did? John actually promoted like the Fantasy Minute, would call radio stations. So he was like on doing the Fantasy Minute, you know, at that time, which was strange. But there was a lot of content theft back then. And we were infuriated because now if there's a free agent, there's a waiver wire cut, there's all that stuff happens, we know instantaneously. Mm-hmm. Back then you did it. So we would call NFL teams asking for the latest players who got cut, you know, practice squatters, because that was not public. Remember, we were still mostly print. There's limited paper when you had print. So a lot of that stuff never got in there. So then we noticed all our news was starting to proliferate on everybody else's site. So we're like, screw that. So we worked hard over a month. We got all the free agents. It was an off season. So we created this guy named Bob Christian, fullback for the Carolina Panthers. It was a takeoff of a Christian over in Atlanta Falcons. There was a fullback with the last name Christian. Maybe it was Bob Christian, but it was a takeoff off of him. Sure enough, within the next 48 hours, nearly 95-98% of the sites. Then we would email them, you know? And next thing you know, Christian disappeared from their
That's hilarious.
It was a death charge. It was like the offseason death charge. So
that's amazing.
So I laugh at that, but at the time I was like, you sorry, Rod and Bass, especially when they were bigger companies who had millions behind them.
Right. You know? And they're going to you and tapping you. So that was nice to stick it back to them. And that, you know, if they don't do their research like that, that gets them fired somewhere along the lines. Like, hey, you're talking about Bob Christian. Like, who is this?
Right. Yeah, done. Exactly. Where'd you
get your information from? Fake news. Oh, man. Awesome. Great story.
Right,
definitely. Thank you so much. All right, there you go. There's William Del Pilar joining us, Joe. We had a special. Look at that special edition. Now we got to try and sum up the
instantaneous
AFC really quick.
We got the instantaneous specials, two interviews in one.
Yeah, so you go. So it's going to be a long one, but so if you guys want to see these interviews too, as well as we put them out there, in our shows, Joe, tell them where everybody can find that stuff. While I fix my stupid light that I just fell off.
You can find this podcast. And we want you to find this podcast, right? Just like all the other ones that we have, political entertainment and other sports. If you want to follow it on our website, grumblingsmedia.com, you can check them out there, see what you think. Also, head over to YouTube, hit that subscribe button at Grumblings Media. And don't forget to put the thumbs up over while you're over there, and then drop in the comments down below that you subscribed. Or if you just want to say hi or ask a question, we are live right now. Drop down in the comments. We're going to react to whatever your opinion is about maybe what we're talking about. If there's something that you want us to talk about or discuss, ask a question or give us an opinion about something. We're happy here to discuss it. You can also head over to rumble.com, which is another newer website that's starting to jump up right now with the podcast. Make sure you drop a follow while you're there. You can also write a review about episodes or maybe even a show while you're over there. And anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora, make sure you drop a follow there as well and continue to grow this community of ours.
All right. That's right, Joe. So we are talking about the AFC West this week. We've covered every other division so far in the AFC, and we're going to get to the NFC in just a little bit. But NFC, AFC West, this is your division right here because you are a Vegas Raiders fan, so you know these teams.
I own
very
this division.
Well, so you know
this. I own this.
Right now, the Chiefs own the division.
I've planted the flag. I do own this division, just so everybody's clear. Right before we get to that, though, there's some news that popped up this week that I kind of want to just touch on real quick. One big thing was quarterback Joe Burrow got officially cleared for full contact amid rehab from his surgery and his wrist injury that. Like we talked about before, him in practice, and even though it was just practice, it's to see that there was no hitch in his wrist. It was very fluid. He was throwing the ball down the football field and what have you. So he's been officially fully cleared for full contact coming into training camp, which is a big deal. The Jaguars, we talked about the Jaguars recently, and we were talking about their secondary. Well, they've locked down Tyson Campbell for the long term with a 4-year deal, $76.5 million contract extension, $53.4 million guaranteed. So they lock up their guy and they're going all in and saying, Tyson Campbell, you've earned our respect, you've earned our trust, and we believe that you're the next up and coming shutdown corner for us. So they lock him up for the future. And then something was discussed this week at the NFL and the NFLPA, that they are in a very high level talks on an 18-game schedule before 2030, the 2030 regular season. So that's something to keep your eyes and ears on and see if this actually goes through, which we expect it to, because the NFL is all about that money. They're trying to push up more revenue. And then last but not least, the Niners with the whole situation with Brandon Ayuk, the wide receiver there. To report to training camp amid trade contract buzz. There's some discrepancy with the reporting. Some people think that he's not going to be there. Some people have reported that he is. Mm-hmm. If in fact he is, that is good faith on Brandon Ayuk's side, saying, hey, listen, I know we had our differences. I'm going to show up. And now Now it's up to you, John Lynch. It's up to you to let's get this deal done so then I can continue playing for the 49ers.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, a lot of news floating around there as camps are just getting geared up. Joe Burrow, what the hell is up with this guy with the different looks every
season? The hair, man.
He really does look like Cody Rhodes now. It's really scary.
It's crazy looking, isn't it?
Right? Yeah, it is. It's weird. But like I said, until he watch if he's going to do like he did last year. Like he sucks. Like early on, he's like, it's got to be the hair. I got to change the hairstyle, you know, something. I don't know, just different styles. But he's been one of those guys to always kind of throw it out there.
I think he needs a new barber, to be honest.
Perhaps. He needs, yeah. What's his publicist
fire
doing
him.
Here?
You know, fire the barber that did that.
All right. So now, finally, let's get into the AFC West, which Joe claims that he owns. But let's start off with the Denver Broncos, Joe. Let's get her started here.
Denver Broncos, it's funny. This past offseason, there was jokes being made about the Broncos. Like, what are they doing? They move on from Russell Wilson. And his contract, they're still paying him right now. He's a Steeler now, making minimum wage in terms of NFL salary. But man, they are still paying him big bucks. And in doing so, they've had to change their team. They've had to change that quarterback room. Coming into this draft, everybody knew it wasn't a secret. They all knew that they were going to draft a quarterback, and they just waited until somebody fell there. And sure enough, a guy that we tabbed as the most likely candidate to be there is Bo Nix, and Bo Nix fits the perfect profile for Sean Payton under his tutelage. So Bo Nix is now there. He's also there with Jared Stidham and Zach Wilson, from formerly of the Jets. All of these guys are fighting for this quarterback spot here. It's an interesting quarterback competition, to say the least, because you have a rookie who's just getting his feet wet, Jared Stidham, who's been kind of like that journeyman backup, and Zach Wilson, who's been a backup but also been a starter but has struggled. So all of them have varying backgrounds, and the favorite, as far as we know, Sean Payton obviously wants Bo Nix to win the job. But let's see how that all shakes out. And in doing so, that quarterback room, honestly, it's a little shaky because there's nothing concrete about it.
Nothing concrete
there. They don't have a veteran presence that everybody knows that he's going to be able to come in and just maybe game manage. There's none of that. Zach Wilson is kind of like a roll-of-the-dice type of quarterback. Maybe Sean Payton, out of anybody, could get a little bit more out of him and make him kind of more not as an aggressive type of quarterback, but kind of dial him back a little bit. Maybe that'll help him. Mm-hmm. Jared Stidham has shown flashes here and there, but has been always a career backup.
Right.
And then Bo Nix, a rookie. Like, so there's no, like, real surefire answer at that quarterback position.
Right, yeah, and look at Bo Nix. Like, I wasn't high at him at all in the draft. I just didn't like a lot of stuff I saw on his college tape. But this, like you said, there's no real answer here. So do you start Bo Nix right away, or do you throw it out there and just start Zach Wilson? I think the happy thing here, especially the narrative for Zach Wilson, could be much like you saw like with Baker Mayfield last year with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Like, this guy gets a chance to start off with the season and then maybe hand it off to Bo Nix, but he shows enough to another team that maybe somebody might be interested in grabbing Zach Wilson from there. And then Jared Stidham has always been kind of that career backup. We've heard a lot of different people said how much they like Jared Stidham, but it's never enough to make him that starter. You know what I'm saying? Like you said, just kind of being there, making rosters. But like I said, the storyline here for me is, what are we going to see out of Zach Wilson, and is he going to produce? And that could be a major storyline during the season and potentially get him a starting gig somewhere else if they truly do believe in Bo Nix and are ready to make that change.
And that's already a storyline. Like, Zach Wilson's already being talked about of possibly winning the job already. Like, obviously, he's the
he's more of the
veteran right now. Mm-hmm. So, of course, he's going to be in the lead as of right now. Bo Nix still needs to learn the playbook, still needs to develop chemistry with these wide receivers. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's one of these things where, like, when a rookie comes in, the job isn't given to them, but at the same time, it's almost pushed towards them because they're the answer that this coaching staff believes in. So for Bo Nix, as long as he can digest that playbook and get comfortable with it, I think that he will end up being the starter. But if there's any reservations in terms of, well, he's just not quite there yet, like even the Patriots right now have exhibited and said that Brissett. Mm-hmm. That Brissett is the starter
he's the
right
most
now.
Ready right now. Yes.
Like he's the most ready.
Well, NFL ready.
It's funny how they use those words because NFL ready, sure, of course. But
you would
they,
think he's been here long enough.
But they,
if he's not ready yet, there's drop.
But problems. They expect Drake to push him and possibly win it, just like with Denver, where they're hoping that Bo Nix will end up being that starter in the very end in week one. And that takes care of the quarterback position, which is a complete mess. That's almost like the whole story of this team and storyline. But when you look at the rest of their offense, though, this is the part where I'm just like, okay, they waited, they got the quarterback, but what did they do with the rest of this team? You look at they've done a tremendous amount recently in the past couple of weeks where they were re-signing offensive linemen right now. Mm-hmm. You know, to name off Quinn Maynard is one of the most high-profile guards in the NFL. They gave him just recently a boatload of money to lock him in for the long term. And then Ben Powers, who, honestly, I don't have a whole lot of confidence in going forward, but they gave him a big extension. You know, they lost Lloyd Cushenberry in free agency, which I feel like was one of the biggest losses for Denver, and they have none other than Luke Wattenberg. Has anybody ever heard that name before? I know I haven't. So it's like, mm-hmm. Is this guy up and coming? Is this guy just a fill-in? Like, they're just hoping that it sticks. So there's a couple of questionable positions on the offensive line where I'm just like, they didn't do anything different. You know, they still have a couple of weaknesses there. And Garrett Bowles, who plays left tackle, mm-hmm. he's been there. You know, he's been their starter, but he's not an elite guy. He's not a great tackle. He's just kind of above average or average. And then on the other side, when they signed a year ago, they signed Mike McGlinchey from the Niners. They just gave him another huge extension to lock him up. So honestly, the right side, I'm perfectly okay with. They're pretty solid there. But then on the left side of that O-line, there's some question marks there to be had. And then you look at the receivers like we touched on before. Nothing real earth-shattering, not a true, like Cortland Sutton is deemed like he's a veteran. He's older, longer in the tooth. He's going to be their number one guy, but they brought in guys like Josh Reynolds, who's kind of been that journeyman wide receiver. Good veteran, not great. He can get the job done, but nothing explosive or flashy. Marvin Mims are really counting on this year. It's his second year as a wide receiver for them. They're hoping that he takes a big step and becomes more that playmaker for them. Tim Patrick, who's kind of been in the starting lineup, does a great job, but is hurt every year. So, like, honestly, very shaky at the receiver position, a little shaky on offensive line. Quarterback, we still don't know, and obviously won't know until the end of training camp, who's going to carry the torch there. And then running back is probably the most solid part of this offense, honestly. Mm-hmm. Javonte Williams had a good year last year, looks to return again this year, and then they added Samaje Perine, which is going to add tremendous depth behind him. So offensively, Jim, I say it's up and down.
Yeah, it's going to weigh a lot onto Joe Lombardi here to get things going, because, again, you were that team there. You got the best year out of Russell Wilson that you could, and they couldn't get along, so he's gone. And then your other weapons, you let walk or see you later.
Yeah.
So you bring in guys that are okay. I mean, Cortland Sutton is absolutely your best guy right there. Tim Patrick, he's shown some really good spots there, too, on occasion. But, you know, like you said, you got your guys that have been here. Josh Reynolds has always been there, a decent wide receiver, but nothing that really blasts off the page here to where it says this
explosive
team is
playmaker.
Going to make a move in this division, let alone make a playoff run. That's why I think it's preposterous that I even hear some of these analysts say sleeper team, the Broncos. Watch out for the Broncos. What the hell are you smoking? Are you going in a cave with Aaron Rodgers and doing the high ayahuasca? What are you doing? What are you looking at? Because what I'm looking at doesn't add up to that. You know what I'm saying? So no. I think there's some growing pains. And like I said, we're going to start to see maybe people start looking at Sean Payton in a different light and say, hey, we got some questions here on how you're doing this. You look good with the Saints here now, but you haven't done squat with this team, and you wanted to go and talk about Nathaniel Hackett? Look what you did. You went in and then you kind of destroyed what was even there and left it in shambles, or they're kicking you out.
Yeah, and then when we look at the defensive side of the football, you know, they made an addition with Alex Singleton coming over from the Eagles at outside linebacker, which I think is a smart move. I think it's a solid move. But again, when you look from head to toe on the defensive side, it's much of the same of last year. You know, there's not really that much of changes. Maybe at safety with PJ Locke getting an extension, a young up and coming player who they really believe in, and they got them slotted in at starter. But other than that, like you look at the rest of this team, it's a lot of guys that have played at different places. Now they're with Denver. Are they going to make Denver any better going forward? Like Pat Surtain, obviously he's one of the best corners in football. But after him, you got a mix and match type of secondary that like adding Brandon Jones from Miami. They're hoping that he can be a great asset next to PJ Locke. Levi Wallace coming over from Pittsburgh, who was formerly with the Bills, then went to Pittsburgh. Now he's with Denver. Like, that doesn't spell success. Like, you're not really sticking with anywhere year to year. So Cody Barton coming over from Washington, formerly of Seattle. Like, there's guys that have different destinations on their name tag, but now they're ending up in Denver, hoping Denver can, you know, strike gold and kind of catapult off of these additions. But man, when you start to change a lot with your roster every year, and I understand they're trying to make the team better, but when you're making these constant changes, it seems like under Sean Payton, there's no continuity. There's no chemistry between the players that are on the roster. They all have to get to know everybody on a personal level and a playmaking level. They all have to like work off each other again and try to figure things out schematically and on the football field. And it doesn't spell success normally when you start changing things year to year to year. So like with Sean Payton making that huge decision, Jim, about sending Russell Wilson away because he was the problem on offense, even though he really wasn't the problem. Now you're stuck where you better hope one of these quarterbacks pan out, because if they don't, Sean Payton, you're risking your job now. Like, you've made the decision to move on from him, a veteran, and now you're giving the keys to somebody, one of these younger guys. Hopefully it's the rookie and maybe he pans out. But man, the team overall to me is like there's too much turnover. There's a lot of changes, some of it positive, some of it negative, but I just don't see this team making the blockbuster change and going from worst to second or first. You're
relying on a lot again.
In another year.
Yeah, because even I've seen Mims have some flashes that looks pretty good. I mean, they're hoping that he could do something with them, but again, that's a, you know, slap in the pan, a flash in the pan. Mm-hmm. But when your offense and your defense was rated as low as they were last year, you would figure out you can only get better, right? Hopefully, you know.
You can only go up.
Yeah, you can only go up.
You can only go up.
Like I said, yeah, expectations are low. All
right. Hand the crown to someone else that sucks.
Absolutely. So when you're talking about high expectations, though, and the crown, we're talking about the Kansas City Chiefs here. Look at the three-peat here, Joe. And
the biggest
happen again.
Yeah, this is probably the biggest, you know, level of playmaking that you have to have. Like, the Chiefs have been so solid offensively, especially, like, Andy Reid, let's be honest, one of the best head coaches to ever coach the game. Like, he has to be, not only just as a head coach, but also an offensive mind. For him to have the creativity that he has and to be able to have fun with his players creating these plays on the fly or what have you before they play against some of their normal opponents in the AFC West, it confuses everybody. Nobody knows what's going to happen from whether it be a goal line play or maybe they're at the 50-yard line to get a first down. They come up with some very interesting plays, to say the least. And when you have guys like Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback, the Chiefs, when they traded up to get Mahomes, they must have been so set on that decision. Like, the whole entire organization was like, we're down for that. Let's go get our guy. They get him. Not many people overlooked Mahomes because a lot of people thought Patrick Mahomes coming out of college from Texas Tech was just a power thrower, was just had a cannon for an arm and not much after that. But let me tell you, the Chiefs saw something else in him, and look at what he's doing now at a very young age, still in the middle of his prime. And he's already won two Super Bowls. How many players can even say that, let alone quarterbacks? Mm-hmm. So Mahomes, no question marks there. You look at the rest of the team offensively, I mean, what are you going to question? Like, the only thing that I have a concern with is the tackles for the Chiefs. Look at last year, Juwan Taylor, one of the most heavily penalized tackles, if not the highest penalized tackle in the NFL.
It should have had more.
That's not a good stat to have. Yeah. And he got away with a lot. And then on the other side, Wynum Morris, who's penciled in as the starter, they're hoping that their draft pick in the second round, Kingsley Sumatea, is going to be able to take that over. Because I'm going to be honest, they still haven't found the tackles to help protect Mahomes without getting penalties. Even Wynum Morris is getting holding penalties more often than you would like to see. So still, tackles is a problem. Inside, obviously one of the best interior offensive lines in the game. When you go to wide receiver, though, this is where you can maybe poke holes at it a little bit. Just like last year where – thank God for Racy Rice jumping onto the scene last year and playing a huge part of that offense, being able to drive down to the football field, becoming a favorite of Pat. But Travis Kelce as well, obviously everybody knows him. But the new kid that they just drafted, Xavier Worthy, blazing fast, the fastest guy coming out of the draft, like not even close. The guy is so fast that he's probably faster than almost everybody in the league at this point in straight line speed. They team him up with guys like Hollywood Brown coming over from Arizona. Racy Rice is still there at the moment, but how long is he? Is the NFL going to suspend Racy Rice from all the troubles that he's had in the offseason? That's something that is a little concerning for Kansas City. You know, is he going to get like an 8-game suspension they're worried about? Maybe 10-game. Maybe it's less. Maybe it's more. So that's still up in the air with Racy Rice, but whenever he does return, it helps the team. But Hollywood Brown, to be honest with you, Jim, like I don't think he's anything special. Like going in Baltimore, when he was with Baltimore, obviously they didn't throw the ball that much when he was there. He showed flashes here and there, but then he also dropped some footballs being wide open. Same thing happened in Arizona. Same thing happened with Kyler Murray when he was trying to get him the football. Sometimes he dropped a touchdown, easily beat his corner, and somehow dropped it. Xavier Worthy kind of fits that kind of mold where he's blazing fast, very little. You know, if you can get a hand on him, you can pop him and throw him right off his route. Even though he's fast, he doesn't have the greatest hands either. Right. So this is kind of like a motto for the Chiefs. It seems like with the receiving core last year, they had guys like MVS in there and guys that were dropping the football. It looks like even though they've changed that receiving core a little bit, looks like they still got maybe possibly the same problems going forward.
Yeah. And, you know, they're always trying to get some of that speed and things. And what's funny is I think I saw something too. Maybe it was even Cowherd or some dipshit, but they made some sense at least at this point when they're saying that, you know, Andy Reid, he's been in the game for a long time, but when the NFL really geared towards scoring and things like that, blah, blah, he just hit his stride and it fit Andy Reid to a T. That's why I think it's natural that we see the changing of the guard from Bill Belichick right to an Andy Reid. It just made sense because Bill Belichick defense first, but you know, a smart offense, you know, get play, you know, to your opponent and do what it takes to get it done and rely on your defense too as well. Andy Reid, you know, the defense have been pretty good with Spagnuolo there, but nothing to really write home about a lot of times. But the offense getting crazy, and Andy Reid, like you said, the guru. So it's kind of funny how the times fit to them, and it was just natural a change of guard there too. And Xavier Worthy, I feel you on the same thing. And the one replay you do see, I think, in camp. I mean, it's camp.
That one play.
And, like, even that was more of a Mahomes play than even him Worthy doing anything spectacular as far as I saw.
He did his job. He caught the ball.
Yeah, it was there. Yes, absolutely. So, but as far as offense, nothing to really talk about here. They're going to still keep doing what they're doing. Nothing to break down.
Yeah, there's one thing that I do want to mention that I saw today is that Kadarius Toney, formerly the Giants, has been with the Chiefs off and on the
field,
like injuries and everything. No, the interesting thing is that they're actually utilizing him in the backfield now, like as a running back.
Well, that way he can't stand off sides, Joe.
Getting it. Well, not just that, but also the fact that they're going to get the ball in his hands, yeah. And he is very difficult when he's in open field. So maybe that's the thinking, is that they're going to mix him with Isaiah Pacheco, who's a very tough runner, and try to throw some defenses off that way. But he's not getting another opportunity in a different capacity, it sounds like.
Hey, that makes more sense to me. Absolutely. Why not? It's got to be his last shot, right?
Not to mention, you know, if you're looking for another, you know, if you're hoping to get a Super Bowl ring, you know, and you're Carson Wentz, who's now the backup of Mahomes, I mean, excellent decision to sign with the Chiefs. Yeah, I mean, defensively, it's a good defense. Everybody knows that. Yeah. That's not a secret. What is a little bit different is the personnel that they're going to do it with.
Yes.
Mike Dana is going to be playing DN now, going to get that starting job. George Karlaftis, who, honestly, when he was coming out of the draft in 22, Jim, I loved this dude. I thought this guy was going to be such an impactful DN, and now is going to get a full-time.
Full-time
at the DN spot. Where I think he's going to take the league by storm this year. Like, he's a very difficult guy to block and does everything well. Plays the run well, pass rushes well, does not allow you to get outside of him. So that's going to be a good thing for the Chiefs defense. Chris Jones signs that mega extension, which I honestly could not understand how they could afford it. But somehow they figured that out.
Like you said, the magic that these money guys do, you know what I mean? The way they fit it in there.
But they figured it out, locking him in for this year and future years. Another guy, Drew Tranquil, who came on last year as a free agent acquisition from the Chargers, played an enormous role in the linebacking core and played it well. They ended up extending him. Nick Bolton coming back for another year. The interesting thing about Nick Bolton is now they're shelling out all this money. Nick Bolton's contract is coming up soon. Like, are they going to be able to afford to keep him too? And then you see a different changing of the guard at the strong side linebacker spot with Leo Chanel, who has been waiting in the wings as a backup. Now looks like he's penciled in as the starter, hoping to get a little bit more out of him and their investment in him. Trent McDuffie, when we go to the secondary, great player. I'm curious to see how he does on the outside, because this guy's been typically the nickel corner for them and has been the shutdown guy at nickel. Now he's going kicked back out to the outside. I know last time he was out there was like his rookie year, struggled a little bit. Maybe he's got, you know, a little bit more experience now and he can handle that outside. But some corners, it throws him for a loop. So I'm interested to see how he maintains that outside. Justin Reed coming back again for another year. Nazi Johnson is now looking like the starting corner for the Chiefs, at least going into training camp. Obviously, he's going to have to earn that spot with the other guys that are behind him trying to fight for that. But all in all, you look at this Chiefs team, whether it be the special teams with their kickers and their punters, which are all pretty good. And then you look at their offense and defense, up and down, pretty solid. Offensively, I would say, has a few weaker spots than the defense, but nonetheless, they've done more with less before, and I think they're going to make a major push yet again this year.
You know, it's funny is when I talk about the Chiefs and the fact that their defense, not to blow you off, to blow your doors off, stuff like that too. But what Spax has been able to do too with what they had was pretty amazing. And they had a second ranked defense last year, but they had a lot of different players, like you said. This is going to be a little bit different. I think that right side of the line is going to be a little suspect. But like you said, Bolton, though, that's one of those guys he's kind of like those, unspoken players that, people like under the radar. He's just balling out when he's out there, and a lot of people don't just, know him or just don't give enough respect, or it's kind of like whatever. You know, they see Chris Jones and that's all they know, what I mean? So he's a big player, right there. And like you said, who knows, might be all of a sudden knocking on the door for a pay me option here. All right, in the meantime, we've got Mike Tackett is in the house with us.
What's going on, Mike?
So he's got a question about the Kansas City Chiefs. He says, how many more years of dominance from KC will we see? Can the Mahomes era go down as the most dominant era when all is said and done?
It's possible, yes. But the thing is what they've already accomplished now, winning back-to-back championships, is unheard of. Like, it's – I don't think it's going to continue. Like, as good as their team is, as great as the coaching staff is, it is so tremendously difficult just to get back to the Super Bowl. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it three times in a row. With you have everybody else getting better around you, whether it be in the division or in the conference. We've already talked about it last year about how competitive this conference is. Are they going to be able to push through all that mess yet again and get it for a third straight year? I think it's too difficult to do so. It's still possible. I'm not saying it's impossible, but man, I can't see it happening for a third straight year.
Yeah, and we talked about it when we covered the other AFC teams, you know, teams that didn't make the playoffs last year that could potentially do it this year that have gotten better, but then also teams that made last year, you know, like the Texans, and they even reload some more, and they look even scarier now. So, I mean, if I put the two rosters together right now, I mean, I might as well just go for the Texans in this, you know what I'm saying? Because looking at that defense on top of what KC is showing me right now.
I mean, even talk about the Ravens. The Ravens had them on the ropes last year. Mm-hmm. They had them on the ropes in the playoffs. They Lamar, run your ass off. Run. In the second half, if he did that just to sustain drives, to get first downs or what have you, that was the problem.
Yep.
The problem was that Lamar, for some reason, went into a shell of himself in the second half. And I got to say, yeah. I think Ravens fans were in the stands being like, what the hell is he doing? Mm-hmm. Like, what? We got them. You know, let's make it happen. Get the first downs. Keep the chains moving. Keep the time going. If he did that and got, like, maybe a few more first downs, even if they stalled out, it would have killed enough time for them not to be able to come back. So, yeah, opportunities were knocked and never answered and forgot for teams like Baltimore. Like that AFC North is very difficult. And then, mm-hmm. you know, there's teams that have had them on the ropes and just kind of let them off the hook. It's unreal.
Yep. And we saw the same thing, though, too, with the Patriots, though, too. And what it is, I think, is you do this, you win so much like this, or you see Patrick Mahomes, what he does, mm-hmm. that you look at that team and they're like, dude, we got to do more because they're never out of this. You know what I mean? So when it gets close,
they don't
in
give
a
up.
Close game, they're kind of like, or even like they're ahead. Like you said, we're ahead. Oh, we kind of got this. They got to look at this team like, dude, no, we got to put the throat, you know, their foot on their throat to squash them out because at any moment, we've seen it. The Bills have seen it a million times. Anybody talk to Josh Allen's therapist?
Oh, yeah.
Because he would tell you that all he needs is like 17 seconds. And then he'll just put it down there on you and score and end your dreams. So, yeah, absolutely. So this question, you could see their dominance and they're continuously doing it. The three-peat, it's going to be tough, but I will not be surprised if they're also still there, you know, making a push every single year for a few years at least.
I do think they're going to make the playoffs. I just think it's going to end in the playoffs at some point in the round, whether it be the first round, the second round.
Everyone else is catching up with
you. You know what I mean? Yep. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And one thing I want to mention about Lamar is – Since we kind of brought that team up and everything and talked about Lamar Jackson. Sure.
Tackett's got a question or thing about the Ravens, too.
My thing is with Lamar is that, you know, the whole mantra about him, like, oh, you're a running quarterback. That's all you're going to be. This side thing. Who gives a shit? Like, honestly, like, if you're Lamar Jackson, why do you care what other people think what kind of quarterback you're going to be? Shouldn't it be about winning and winning championships? Like, if you run and get 3,000 yards a season, but you only throw for 2,500, who cares? Who cares? As long as you're winning and you're winning your championships and getting your MVPs, like, what difference does it make if you are a running quarterback? Just embrace it. I'm just saying, Lamar, embrace that. I don't care if you run for 200 rushing yards every week.
Yep.
Get your team to wins and win championships.
Yeah, I think the same thing could be said with what the Eagles did last year, too. To an extent with Jalen Hurts. There we go. Mike Tackett, there he says, Ravens gonna Raven. To quote the late late Dennis Green, if you want to crown them, crown them. Crown their asses. But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook. There you go. There it is. I got it right here.
But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
There you go. The late and great Dennis Green, absolutely. Great words that will be remembered forever, for eternity, because it
never
happens
forgotten.
All too often. You know what I mean? So many coaches are thinking that same quote in their head, I think, after a loss to the Chiefs, you know what I mean, right now. All right.
There's so many great ones, too.
Oh, yeah.
The playoffs?
A bunch of the playoffs.
Playoffs?
A bunch.
Talk about playoffs?
All right. So next, let's get to your Las Vegas Raiders, Joe. We have to talk about the Raiders. I mean, another quarterback situation there, too.
Another quarterback situation, but people are kind of overblowing this quarterback situation. Not as bad as the Denver Broncos.
Oh, yeah, I know. I understand that one.
A lot of people kind of, they're all pushing for, they think that Gardner Minshew is the landslide pick for the starter because, not because of what he's doing in practice.
He's the most NFL ready, Joe.
No, it's not even that. It's because of the contract they gave him.
Yes.
But the thing is when you look at the contract, it's the highest paid backup quarterback type of contract. It's not a starter like you're guaranteed to start. Aiden O'Connell is under a rookie deal. Aiden O'Connell, Antonio Pierce, and the whole organization have come out and said it's his job to lose. It's his job to lose. So I don't know where the mindset goes when they think Minshew's already going to take hold of it. But Aiden O'Connell, I'll be honest with you, like as of right now, going into training camp, the day one was today for the Raiders. Aiden O'Connell, he already still has the edge, is what it was reported, is that he still has that edge. He hasn't given up any ground, and they're going into training camp. I think that he ends up taking it no matter what because he's already been there for a year. Like he's already got the chemistry of Devontae. Devontae's even signed off on Aiden O'Connell saying, I like him as my quarterback. So I don't know where the whole idea is.
And that makes more sense. Like if I'm a head coach, I'm doing the same thing. Because who's the new guy? You don't have a job. Say it's a regular job.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a manager at my job, okay? I hire a new guy. I don't all of a sudden say, hey, the guy that I've had here, you know, that's still done pretty well and stuff like that, but I'm hiring a new guy that might have the same type of experience. I'm not pulling that other guy out of a position and putting this guy in instantly. When I'm not even sure exactly how he's going to fit with this offense, if he will or not, and whatever. Even despite I'm not in control of the payroll, it's whatever, you know, they decided when they hired him. That would make no sense because, one, it's no good for that one person that's already there, morale and things like that. And what does that show even other teammates or, for me, again, employees, where you bring in somebody that they don't even know and you can replace just like that. Without even knowing what this guy is
doing. Doesn't send a good message.
No, it doesn't. And so you're going to stick with him until he shows you that he's incapable of doing it. You know, what you want to see is growth. And that's what you won't be able to do that if you see him for that little bit that you did last year and then yank him out when there's any little bit of pressure. We saw that with the Miami Dolphins at times back when they had Fitzpatrick.
Yep.
Yank out Tua whenever, you know, there was a little maybe sketchy spot. You know, we're not sure. Let's put Fitzpatrick in at this point.
I mean, you could
And now look what he's doing now. Would he just stayed with it, worked hard, you know, studied, bulked up, and looking like one of the better quarterbacks in the National Football League right
now. Even go back to like when Jay Cutler was a Dolphin and Ryan and Tannehill was still there. And they were swapping them in and out throughout the regular season. Yeah. It was like, wait a second. What's happening here? So, So, I mean, I think the quarterback situation is going to figure itself out, especially training camp. I think Aiden O'Connell ends up winning it. You look at what he did, not in the first half of last year, but the second half of the last year when Antonio Pierce took over as head coach. A lot of things changed. The defense got tremendously much better. They were a top 10 defense after AP took over. He let Patrick Graham coach the defensive side of the ball, call what he wanted to call. And then the offense changed. It got a little bit more aggressive. It wasn't just pitch and catch for 2 yards. Mm-hmm. It was throwing it down the football field and attacking. And they did that with the likes of guys like Devontae Adams that everybody knows. Jacoby Myers, as a Raiders fan, I was actually surprised in how good Myers actually is. I thought Jacoby Myers was kind of like this average type of wide receiver. Yeah, he gets the job done, but he's not a big playmaker. Man, was I wrong. This guy is electric. He's a great, you know, second piece to this receiving core right alongside with Devontae Adams is amazing.
Yeah, because how many times have we seen that with the Patriots? You know what I mean? Just a product of the system. This is how they work. You put them somewhere else, they don't really perform as well. Like you said, though, Jacoby Myers really surprised you.
Yeah, and he was always that good though. Mm-hmm. Like, and it even shows like with Tom Brady when everyone was, I'll say it right now. I swear, I myself thought that Tom Brady was a system quarterback for the longest time. He proved me wrong. He proved me that he showed me that when he was there with McDaniels, it was Brady. It was all Brady. And then when he goes to Tampa, it was all Brady. Like, it was just about him and how smart and accurate and a great quarterback that he was. So Same thing going to Myers. He was a much better player than I thought than I gave him credit for. They have a young up and coming rookie from last year who Trey Tucker, absolute burner, had some big time plays for the Raiders. Now looking like he's going to start in the slot receiver. My only problem with this is that the lack of depth is after you get through Adams, Myers, and Tucker. Now you look at the backups. It's like Jalen Guyton, journeyman receiver who formerly with the Chargers. You know, DJ Turner, another guy who's never cracked lineup or even gotten much playing time. So if any one of these starters go down, it could be a big problem where they might have to reach out to free agents that are left over and try to grab with them. But starting lineup, pretty solid. Aiden O'Connell, I think, is going to be a very solid. He's probably going to take another big step forward this year and what he was able to do last year. And then offensive line, I feel like, was a big concern going into the offseason. Had a huge hole at guard. They end up drafting Jackson Powers Johnson, who I think is going to be an excellent player for them at left guard. In my view, was one of the best interior offensive linemen coming out of the draft. Team him up with Colton Miller. I mean, what a great tandem that is. Andre James, they lock him up. And then you look at Dylan Parham, who honestly, Parham, I wasn't thrilled with that left guard. They move him to right guard, which, and they're saying that they've watched film on him and that he plays better at right side. And then the big enigma is right tackle. Nobody knows who the starter's going to be. Nobody. They got penciled in Thayer Munford, who's shown flashes, but he's got to earn this job. And there's other guys behind him that are all chomping at the bid. And then their other draft pick in the first round, a guy who they a lot of people say that slid right to them and didn't see that the Raiders were going to take him in Brock Bowers at tight end, a guy who isn't your typical tight end. He can also play slot receiver, can play in the backfield, run the ball, do a lot of different things. So I'm curious with this offense with Luke Getsy. Luke Getsy now comes over as the offensive coordinator, different view, different ideas, different concept. How creative is he going to be? Coming over from Chicago was pretty bland, honestly, in his offense there. Was it because of Justin Fields at quarterback? Was he limited in what he wanted to do? And now that you come to this team, you look at the receiving core, the potential for the offensive line. The running backs I'm not thrilled about. With Zamir White being the starter, no longer Josh Jacobs. That to me is a huge it's a bigger hole than Raiders fans realize.
Yeah.
Josh Jacobs was not only just a playmaker at running back, but also he just made things happen. Whereas none of these running backs that are there right now, I don't see that from any of them.
Right.
They're not going to be able to hand the ball off to Zamir White and be like, here, get us 10 yards. He's not going to have it. He's just a bulldozer. That's it. So concerns with running back, concerns with the depth behind receivers, and still don't have an answer at right tackle.
Yeah, I agree with you there, too. And the way I'm looking at it, it kind of gears to me like they should go more two tight end sets with the wide receivers, too, again, and kind of mix it around. Because, again, after that, on your depth, if one of these guys goes down, God forbid, you're in rough shape.
It's funny that you mentioned that, too, because Luke Getsy, that's what he ran in Chicago, was a 12-man formation. Where you would have double tight end sets and you play off of that. That formation, I think, is going to be the staple this year for the Raiders offense. You're going to see a lot of that. You're going to see a lot of motion. You're going to see Michael Mayer, who's also another gifted tight end who they got a year ago in the second round. They're going to probably try to get real creative with these tight ends, with the receivers that they have, the formations that they have. And I feel like that's going to be the difference with Luke Getsy's offense this year with the Raiders versus last year in Chicago.
Yeah, and looking at the offense too, what I liked about this draft for the Raiders is it's not too often that you get a defensive-minded coach like, you know, Aaron Pierce here. Antonio Pierce. I should know this. I'm
just
a Giants fan
for
lifelong.
Sure.
Yeah, Giants fan forever. That he focused on what you guys really needed. You know what I mean? A lot of defensive-minded coaches want to just say, hey, I'm just going to grab more of my guys. My defensive, let's go. And so this, which they did need some more help on the defensive side of the ball because, hell, Max Crosby can't do it all, even though he really tried and really made a difference. He almost did. Yeah. But I really like the idea that they did focus on offensive line and they were able to get Brock Bowers, like you said, like a draft steal right
weapon.
There. So I think it's a great another weapon here that could only improve your offense, and especially with a younger quarterback. And like we've said time and time again, a quarterback's best friend is a good tight end, and he's got
two of them now.
Right there, two of them right there. Yep, absolutely. So on the defensive side, again, their key players right there, Robert Spillane and Max Crosby, still there, going to get it done and get theirs, but they did add some additions onto this defense, Joe. Let's take a look at the defense.
So here's the thing, too, is the D-line is probably has now turned into a major strength of the Raiders going into this year. We all know Max Crosby, how dangerous he is. He takes on double teams, triple teams, and still makes plays. But the biggest deal this free agency period for the Raiders was adding Christian Wilkins from the Miami Dolphins. A lot of people viewed him as the best D tackle in free agency, not Chris Jones, because of how versatile he is. He's a hustler. He's kind of like Crosby in D tackle form. He just doesn't take a playoff. He's 110% every down all the time and hustles like crazy. To put him next to Crosby, or however way they align this, because it's going to be interesting, is it's going to wreak havoc in the backfield. Whether it be a run play or a pass play, offenses, you're in trouble in terms of pressure. And then a guy who's kind of an unsung hero in Malcolm Kuntz is on the opposite side. He had 9 sacks last year, guys. 9 sacks as a D-end. Kind of went under the radar last year late in the season. Didn't play in the first half because Josh McDaniels, for some reason, didn't want him in there. Then when AP took over, said, hey, no, you're playing. Has 9 sacks in the second half of the season. Mm-hmm. Incredible. So look for him to take another huge step because guess what? Contract year. He's looking for a payday. So he's going to look to boost up. And then you can't forget about the draft pick that they took a year ago in 23 and Tyree Wilson, mm-hmm. who had all this hype, had all this – like, this dude is going to be amazing DN. He's going to come in. But he had an injury. And the Raiders doctors were okay with it, but they knew it wasn't going to be healed until probably another, like several months later, where he did play a little bit, and he didn't look like anything special. And you're like, as a Raider fan, or as a football fan, you're like, what's the hype about this guy? This guy's not doing much. Well, now they're saying in this offseason, he's 100% healthy, 100% ready to go. Looks like a completely new player. And now they're experimenting with this D-line, possibly having on pass rush downs, guys like Wilkins, Crosby, Tyree Wilson, and Kuntz all coming after the quarterback. So something that's going to be exciting for Raider fans coming into this year is how they're going to be creative with this D-line rotation and what they do to attack offenses. But none of that, like Jim, you mentioned Robert mm-hmm. Spillane. Robert mm-hmm. Spillane, team captain, mm-hmm. a guy who has been a career backup.
Yep.
And became a free agent. The Raiders saw something in him in the past regime. They signed him and has played miraculously well. A guy who was seen as limited in coverage, had 4 interceptions last year.
Yeah.
I mean, mm-hmm. Is a guy who's very difficult to run against. And then you got to look at the secondary behind them. I have an issue with the secondary. A lot of people are saying like, oh, they got Jack Jones.
I don't mind
Jack Jones is fine, but honestly, like Marcus Epps, I like.
Yeah.
But after that, like Trayvon Merrick, he's not as good as everyone says he is.
Yeah.
He's not. They have a guy who's his backup in Isaiah Palamau, who actually played better than Trayvon Merrick when given the opportunity. So I hope that in training camp, things might get shaken up here. Maybe some things change. They got some young corners like Nate Hobbs, nickel corner, great player for them. But guys like Jacorian Bennett, and then they went and drafted like 3 other corners in later in the draft that they're hoping that they're going to find, you know, lightning in a bottle and to maybe to shore up that other side of the ball because they didn't do it in free agency. Mm-hmm. They didn't bring any vets in. So let's see what happens there. But I still feel like they have some holes still on this defense, especially in the secondary. But, again, it's hard to argue where, like, maybe you don't need the best coverage because they geared up that front 7 to where they're like, we don't need that much time to cover.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. That's what I mean. Just give him a few seconds in there, you know, and he can get it done. We got a few comments here from Mike Tackett. He says Farba and Minshew cause for must-see TV in Las Vegas. I think people would like to see that stuff, and we get it. Like, we talked about it a little bit just when we covered even the Colts when we were doing the divisions. We had even the first segment was even about what Gardner Minshew did with the Colts, and it was pretty outstanding. And we've seen many stats, you know, put him next to actually Trevor Lawrence's career right now, and Minshew looks like he's having the better of the career right now. So that, it's amazing, different points of view and things mm-hmm. like that. And when you're given the opportunity, you got to shine. And that's Gardner Minshew's got to be one of those guys that's actually that guy that could prove that to you. If you want to take anything away from Gardner Minshew, if you're a young athlete out there and stuff, take whatever time you can when you're on that field to do what you can with it and make things happen. Because look at what happens. You get more deals and it expands your career.
And what a personality.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, a guy that makes millions of dollars but lives out of a camper in the parking lot. Like, that's what this guy is. He's like real down to earth, great locker room guy.
Cool to hang with, you know, locker room guy. Yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure he's going to tailgate before he goes into the stadium.
Nice. Yes. All right, just to change pace before we get to our last team in our AFC West preview, Mike Tackett's got a question for us, so we're going to take a look at it and give him an answer. All right, he says, thoughts on the Arena Football League playing their championship game at a mall. This past weekend.
Ugh,
initially, God. I hated it. Yeah. But after thinking about it, I like it. Ultimate fan experience, close access to the game and players. Leather couches, shops, and restaurants. What do you guys think?
I think a lot of it was – most of it was standing room only, the tickets, because I looked them up.
Yeah.
Most of it was standing room only. I was actually thinking about going to it.
Yeah, because it was not too far away from where we are.
Right. But I was just like, what do you do? What do you mean standing room only, like tickets? Like, nah. Like, I want to be able to see the game. If I'm getting a ticket and I got to stand behind, like, six other people, like – come on. Like, I don't know. I think that it wasn't the right venue for it. I think that the mall is – it was limited viewership. Mm-hmm. Like, they probably sold a bunch of tickets, but most people probably couldn't see the game or at least some of the game or whatever.
Right. And, I mean, and that field is – I guess typically when you look at it, it's small.
It is.
But in the mall – I mean, they even cut off the corners of the end zones and stuff like that. It was all rounded off. So it even had less space. And like you said, the standing room only. Even when we're in the arena and we're you know, our Albany Firebirds were there. So, I mean, Albany always represents in the Arena League, whether it be the NAL League, you know, or the arena now. They're always there in the championship. And we've been to the last couple here, and the place is electric. And you're not getting that from a mall. I'm sorry. I mean, it's great that they end up getting, you know, a TV deal finally here, you know, and at CBS, I think it showed it and things. But probably just for the look for it. You know, like, oh, my goodness, they're playing in a mall. Here we go. Let's put this out there and see what people think. Maybe people grasp onto this. But
it was
it's a thing, but I don't think they should do it again. If they want to find a neutral spot, I think that's maybe what they're trying to do.
That's what they were doing,
Albany's been able to play it at home a lot, and I think that's partially, again, because you see that crowd, that home field advantage really gets people amped up, and we're able to, you know, pull out a win. Well, at least for Albany, they haven't been able to beat that team all season and stuff like that, too. And it sucks they just came up short in that game, too.
Yeah,
as well.
the other thing, too, is you got to make it – it has to – if you want to have it at a neutral location, have it at another arena field. Like, a team that isn't, you know, there anymore. Like, they didn't make the playoffs. They didn't make it to the Super Bowl and all that. Like, have it at one of those spots where it's away from both teams' home field, you know? I mean, but the other part of that, too, is the location that they selected, I feel like it was like, okay, well, we'll still be able to get some Albany fans down to Jersey. You know what I mean? I feel like maybe that was the thinking. Maybe they were like, you know what, we'll have it in a neutral location, but they couldn't find a field for some reason. How could you not?
Yeah.
How could you not find an arena in New Jersey that you'd be able to do it?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it was rushed. I think the whole thing was rushed to find a neutral field, and none of the fields were available that they wanted. So that's why they ended up settling for the mall. And I personally think it was a disastrous experience for the obviously the fans that were there. And I hope that they don't do it again, just like you said. But maybe think ahead of time when you're trying to maybe book something like that. You know, maybe not do it so late.
Jack is on YouTube now. He says Mall of America would have been better. Well, Mall of America is bigger, but that's a hell of a lot of traveling, though, too. They have to get the Minnesota.
How are they going to do security then?
Yeah. But for me, Prudential Center, right? Do you agree? Prudential Center, you know, where the Devils play? It's a hockey arena still, and still larger. And, but that much larger than what the Times – or no.
No, but the
MVP arena.
They put the lines down and everything for the turf.
Yeah, they have it all set up. It would be perfect. And, again, you could seat more people, so it's still – fill the
that
crowds.
That would
Because that's what you're
Anything
hoping
like
to.
That.
I think you're getting even people. Because if you close it off to where the market is, like we did with Albany, you're going to get the fans from Albany.
Right.
The traveling fans that you did get with the other teams, like with the Cobras where we saw them come and play, were – the team owner and his family, and then some diehard that were just, season ticket holders or whatever that would go.
Right.
Super fans of the arena or whatever. Yeah. You weren't opening it up to those other markets. So if you hold it somewhere closer that could fit more people, closer to those other markets, you can't tell me some of the fans of the Arena League from other markets will say, hey, the championship game, my team didn't make it, but they're only right down the road. I'll go watch it, see what happens, and at least boo against this team or something like that. I think that would be a better.
Yeah, I agree. Like, I think what it was is I really do think that it was planned too late, and that's why they couldn't find a good spot for them. Maybe if the league is going to last long term, start working on it now to find that Super Bowl event venue or whatever right now and book it now. Because we all know that, like, it's not a secret about the Arena League on how some teams were financially strapped. One or two teams, I think, bowed out this year.
Yeah.
And it's like, but if they can continue trying to build the financial part of the league and per team, maybe it'll give them a better shot next season for the Arena Bowl.
Yep, absolutely. So maybe we'll set up an interview with Jeff Levack one time for the Albany.
Let's work on it.
Maybe he can give us the insides, scoop on some of that. You know what I'm saying?
No comment.
He can maybe tell us.
We'll just say no comment.
Perhaps he'll be like, I don't know. My quarter and I, we're talking, and who knows? But we got Mike Tackett again for another comment. He says about 10 years ago, an indoor team from Ohio traveled to Pennsylvania to play a game at a high school stadium in February with snow on the field. And it was funny that you even bring this up, Mike Tackett, because as I was talking, I was thinking about, Mike, do they try even say, which is to play an outdoor place? Because I'm trying to think as we're talking about different little places. I'm thinking of Quest Field, where the Giants practice. It's not, a big spot, but maybe they fit it there or whatever. Or just even an open, arena somewhere, a stadium somewhere that's just open outside. But why would you have your championship game when you're an indoor game be outside? So that I understand it's all still turf, but even the turf is a bit different than what the turf is, I guess, I've seen, for other,
The one thing that I'll say is that it's probably impossible to do it at a field like that because of all the other nuances about the game. Like, not only is it a smaller field, which wouldn't be a problem, but it's hanging the nets. Hanging the field goal nets, like where are they going to hang it? Are they going to try to prop it up somehow? Like it's all the other nuances, and you have to build the walls then for the out of bounds because that's part of it.
Yeah, because it's a shorter field too.
I feel like it just would cost so much more to do something. It would be cool, to be honest. It'd be cool if they could pull it off, like somewhere down in Florida, in Orlando or something. That'd be pretty dope, like to have it outside for the Arena Bowl. But it doesn't have that inside feel, and it's called Arena Bowl for a reason, so. Be a little bit weird.
They do a lottery of what team holds the championship. Like we see with the NFL, they decide to pick what team will win. It's a spot to host it. What city or whatnot. Maybe they do something like that. And it's not just, a home field advantage or whatever. Maybe, again, if Orlando Predators don't make it, but, say it's Albany and someone else, they play in Orlando still. So each market still gets a piece of that, even though if they haven't won, that could be something potentially.
It could, that might work.
At least to change it a little bit, because that would build even, I think the market as well. Say your market isn't very big, like teams collapsing because you're not getting, you know, people wanting to go.
You're not
but
selling
if you
out,
say
yeah.
this is the championship game, now these are the two best teams in this league.
Right.
Come watch these two play.
Yeah.
And then you kind of see it, and you're like, you go, and you're like, hey, why not? Tickets are fairly cheap. Let's go and check it out. You're like, oh, look at these guys. I'm like, okay, our team needs to do something to get as good as this team now, maybe, then too. Like, let's go. You know what I mean? Or you see other players recruit and maybe try that city maybe too, you know. So – I don't know. We could talk about arena too a lot, I guess. But Mike Tackett, he always brings it, Joe. You know,
he
brings it about everything though. So, all right. So finally, we are talking about the AFC West. We're going to round off the AFC here with the West and one last team. Last but certainly not least, the Los Angeles Chargers here, Joe.
The Chargers. Which, by the way, I saw
you're probably going to say what I'm thinking, but go ahead.
I saw Colin, right?
Yeah.
Today, and he had his show, and he ranked. He's kind of doing what we're doing right now.
Yeah.
Like, he's picking division winners and all that, right? So he went division by division in the AFC. He gets to the AFC West, and he says, obviously, the Chiefs, because why not, right? They're the kings of the crown.
The Kansas City Chiefs.
And they can't be – they can't be moved. They're always winning the division. So he's going to have them in there once again. Second, he puts the Chargers second. And I found his decision to put the Chargers second interesting because he's like, oh, well, Jim Harbaugh's always been a winner. He was a winner before he left the league, and everybody, you know, wanted him then as a head coach. Then years later, comes back. I think he's going to continue what he left off at. That's your reasoning? He's like, well, receivers – they still got to add to it, but they drafted one, so they should be fine. Just thought it was kind of funny how he gave very little details in terms of his reasoning to have them finish second.
Joe, you know, sometimes that's the way it is. Look at Colin. Colin has said that he was big on backwards hats. If you wear a backwards hat, you obviously aren't paying attention to the game, and you're just, you know, la-di-da, and you're not, you know – you know, an elite quarterback. Hat forwards. You know, Aaron Rodgers. Hat forwards. Russell Wilson.
Yeah, he gave a nonsense reasoning.
Ever since Russell Wilson turned his hat backwards, not any good anymore. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that logic is terrible.
Yeah, and that's what he just needs a hat, you know, to try and justify his choices. Well, but guys always have their favorites, and it's an easy one. He probably didn't study enough on the Chargers and like, Jim Harbaugh – coming back into the league, he's a winner. You know, he's always been doing this. He's got the pedigree. His brother is a winner. You know, they're born into this, and he's going to continue on.
Yeah, it wasn't that in depth. But my thing is, I keep basically just said, oh, he's got all the pieces that he needs to win, and that's that. Let's talk about the pieces to win.
Yes, that's right.
Offensive line, check.
Ooh, piece of candy.
Right? Like, it's a check. Like, they get. They have Rashawn Slater. They drafted Jawalt. Like, now they have bookend tackles. The interior of the offensive line is pretty darn good. The only question mark that I would say is Trey Pipkins, who formerly was a right tackle. They kicked him into guard, thinking that he's going to play much better there. But very solid offensive line. And that's what Jim Harbaugh needs to do his run-heavy style offense. And when you have an offensive coordinator by the name of Greg Roman, formerly of the Ravens offense and how they ran the ball with Lamar Jackson, it's interesting because now you're having two like-minded individuals that love to run the football, pound the rock, grind yards out, get first downs, and keep the clock trimming down. Check. When you look at tight ends, now Jim Harbaugh loves tight ends for more reasons than you'll ever know. He ended up signing a couple tight ends in free agency. Will Dissly, Hayden Hurst.
What?
They had already on the roster a guy by the name of Donald Parham, who was a receiving threat and a major one at that. But you put those three tight ends now in his run-heavy scheme, he's going to have double tight end sets. He's going to have them leak out for passes. He's going to have them stay in block. He's going to mix it up. But one thing's for sure is that he's going to keep somewhat similar formations and just pound the rock with guys like Gus Edwards now in the running back room. Mm-hmm. J.K. Dobbins, mm-hmm. he signs in a very, very low number for a salary, saying this is your last-ditch effort to make the team, and be productive in the league. And then they drafted a guy by the name of Kamani Vidal, who I really liked in the draft, a guy who I think is going to be special down the road. But again, he's put together some guys that might not be huge names, and some have struggled with the injuries, but he's saying with my offensive line, with my tight ends, with this backfield, I can move the ball. I can score points. I can get first downs. And when you say, oh, but what about the receivers? Well, let's take a look at the receivers. Josh Palmer returns healthy yet again, but a guy who often gets injured every year. Is he going to be able to last this year now that maybe he doesn't run as many routes? Maybe. Quentin Johnson, who they took a year ago, still hasn't developed into that number one caliber wide receiver, a guy who struggles with route running, sometimes catching the ball. And Ladd McConkey, they drafted out of Georgia, the slot wide receiver who's very quick, very fast, very shifty, a guy that, in a similar mold that he had back in Michigan, that I think is going to be able to become that go-to guy to move the sticks and whatnot. And, oh, yeah, the quarterback, Justin Herbert. Mm-hmm. Very good quarterback. I have no issues with him, but I just feel like this year his talents are going to be used to the fullest. Because of this offense, not necessarily – not him.
Right.
I think just because of the way Jim Harbaugh's mentality is on the offense and how he wants to just kind of grind games out, score, run the clock out, that type of mentality, I think Herbert's not going to have as great of a year just because of the change of the offense. So I like what – I like the mindset of Jim Harbaugh. I like the fact that he just – paid close attention to the positions that were important in his offense. But what happens if the run game gets stopped? You play a really good run defensive team. They're slowing you down. You're going three and out more often. Now guess what? You're down by two touchdowns. Now you got to turn it all around, and you have to attack in the passing game. So I'm not so sure. We've seen teams like this before where they do well as long as they're leading, but the second that they get behind, kind of like the Ravens in a sense, the second they get behind by a couple touchdowns stuff, they're not a passing team by any means, or come from behind win team. Chargers might struggle in that area where if they get caught behind and they're not ahead, where they might struggle to come back and try to win the game in the end. So I think that this is a big experiment by Jim Harbaugh, taking that same mentality that he had in college to bring it into the NFL, knowing that in today's era, it's a pass-happy league.
Yeah.
It's no more this grinding out, run the clock down, score points, and win that way, and low scoring. It's high scoring. Score quickly. Get the ball back. Score again. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all pans out. He has the talent to do what he wants to do. I'm just curious if it's going to sustain and last.
Yeah, but, I mean, again, it depends on if, to quote the great LL Cool J, if you can do it well. You can get it done. Look at the Baltimore Ravens. I was surprised to look at this offense last year and how quickly they could score by running the ball. It was they could go just pound the rock right down so fast in like a 2-minute drill by running. I was so blown away. I was like, I've never seen anything like this before. Now, will Jim Harbaugh's offense be the same? Not so much, because you don't have those same type of running backs.
You don't have Lamar
former,
Jackson.
Yeah, and you don't have Lamar Jackson. And you don't have, you know, again, you got former guys that used to play for the Ravens, which we wonder where he got that insight on with for the running backs. But with a good running game, you can see that you can score, but I understand what you're saying, Joe, and we've talked about this with Derrick Henry with the Titans. Yes, when it all comes push to shove, you've got to be able to get it done. You do have the quarterback, check, that is there. But, again, who's he going to rely on? From what I'm hearing, even sometimes, from insiders, they're even saying that Quentin Johnson is going to move out of the starting lineup even, too. So that would be kind of a surprise if this guy isn't really moving up and performing well. Like you said, then what do you got?
That's a problem.
You know, that is a problem.
And that was a problem even in the offseason where there was experts talking about this scenario and saying, well, Chargers, they're picking five. They got to take Malik Nabers if he's there. They can't let him slide. They got to take him. They got to take one of the top-end wide receivers. They can't let them go by, or even Roma Dunze.
Yeah.
And sure enough, we called it here first. Like, we were like, they're not going wide receiver. They're going to go offensive line. That's what they need. Mm-hmm. And that's their most important position right now. So not going after the receivers early and waiting into the second round, which was fine. You ended up coming away with Ladd McConkey, who I think is going to be an excellent receiver for them. But after that, you got, like, Quentin Johnson still hasn't answered the call. Josh Palmer is always injured. DJ Chark is always injured. Mm-hmm. Brendan Rice, who I really like. I think Brendan Rice could actually earn a starting job. And a guy who I think fits Jim Harbaugh's offense extremely well, because not only can he block, he can do everything well. He runs routes well. He catches the ball well. So that's probably the only, like, silver lining here, is that you do still have guys maybe behind your so-called starters that might evolved to be something special for you. So offensively, I think they're okay with the style offense that they want, but I just kind of worry about for Chargers, like, now when it comes to grind time where you're down by 10 points, there's only 3.5 minutes left. You got to throw the ball. You can't run the ball down the field. Mm-hmm. You just can't. You're going to run the clock out. So are they going to be able to get to that point where they become difference makers? So it's going to be a challenge. I mean, it's not like it's not going to be for them. But if they can stay ahead, I think that's where they can win all the games, is if they can stay ahead and chew the clock, then most likely they'll win.
Right, Joe. And again, not only just the offense needs to get it going. Last year they were 21st, but the defensive side too, for some of the players that they have.
The most overrated defense.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the key to this team altogether, which has always been the storyline for the last, I think, 7 years that we've been doing this show, is healthy. You know, I mean, some of your key players are never out there. No. You know, Joey Bosa is never out there. Derwin James, you know, and always injured too. I mean, things like that. Khalil Mack is a shell of his former self. You know what I mean? So the defense really needs to step up too, because the way your offense is now, it was geared up before. The way we saw that Justin Herbert with the weapons with Keenan Allen and Mike Williams, they could go toe-to-toe and score back on the Kansas City Chiefs. They showed that they can beat them.
Yep.
Not so much now anymore. You know, it's going to be tough.
Completely different now. Mm-hmm. And I will say this.
But I tell you what, they probably will go for it less on fourth down, though.
Less. I'm willing to bet on that.
That would just be an easy prop bet.
But yeah, Jim Harbaugh is not dumb when it comes to head coaching and making decisions. So, but the one thing that I will say is that the Chiefs did struggle with that. They struggled when teams were able to run on them. Mm-hmm. And when you have a physical team like the Chargers are building right here with their offense, at least, they had struggled. Like, when the Raiders beat them on Christmas Day, that's what they struggled with. They didn't have an answer for the physicality and the running game that the Raiders had. Now, that had to open some eyes in that game, where the Chargers got to be feeling pretty good about themselves when they do play the Chiefs. Yeah, they can go toe-to-toe with them in terms of passing. But guess what? Now it's a different mentality. Now it's more physicality. It's beating you up in the trenches and running the ball down your throat, where I think that's a recipe to maybe pull off a win or two against the Chiefs. So maybe this could work out for them in the long run, but it remains to be seen. But they got to get it done on the football field. And then defensively, just like you brought up, injuries were a big problem. And Joey Bosa has been injured so much. Mm-hmm. A guy that makes a ton of money is not available to you. I thought for sure that they were going to look to trade him this year, this offseason. I thought for sure. Instead, they work a deal, keep him there. Same thing with Khalil Mack. They keep him there. But these two guys, Khalil Mack is playing well beyond his years. Like, he still plays. He doesn't play like a 30-plus-year-old guy. Mm-hmm. Like, he's much different, but he's only one guy. We talk about Max Crosby with the Raiders. Khalil Mack's like pretty much the only one doing anything on that D-line.
Basically.
So needs Bosa to stay healthy so that he can at least help Khalil Mack. And then, you know, they bring in former Michigan players, former Michigan star Junior Colson at linebacker. Mm-hmm. Obviously knows Jim Harbaugh extremely well. And going to pencil in at the starter right away, and rightfully so. Was seen as one of the top-end linebackers in this draft. I think he's going to fit in extremely well with this defensive scheme that they're going to put into. And then other than that, like, they have a couple of guys who I feel like name-wise people don't realize who they are. But guys like Puna Ford, who I think is an excellent nose tackle, Morgan Fox, who formerly of the Rams, then went to the Panthers, now with the Chargers. This guy's an underrated player. Guy's a pretty good player that is going to help out this defensive line. What looks like that they're going to go to a 3-4, which is interesting. So you're going to have Bosa standing up on the edge. You're going to have Max standing up on the edge. I think this is going to play into their skill set way better than just putting their hands in the dirt and going. So to have the three down linemen, have Bosa coming off the edge, have Matt coming off the edge, they're looking to create pressure on people and offenses. So the big key on the back end is how healthy can they stay? Asante Samuel, often injured. Derwin James, like you mentioned, often injured. They do have some great talent, and they managed to bring in a guy by the name of Christian Fulton from the Tennessee Titans. One of the better corners in the league, guy that kind of went under the radar this past season, and they managed to get him to put him opposite Asante Samuel. Again, it's all going to come down to health, and it's all going to come down to understanding the new scheme that's going to be implemented and working together. On paper, we've said this time and time again, they have the talent. They could be so much better than what they have been. We got to see it, though. We got to see it on the football field. If injuries creep up on this team yet again, I'd fire the whole training staff. I'd hire new people because something's not working in L.A., and it can't be the talent that they have. So things have changed. Yes, it's going to be a different-looking team for this season. I'm just curious to see how Jim Harbaugh navigates it, the offense plays against the teams that they're going to have to face, and to look to see if this defense gets any good,
right?
Honestly.
All right, Joe, so there you go. We've talked it about all the
we
teams
talked
here
about
in the West. We talked about a lot tonight, so we really appreciate everybody sticking with us here. It's another two-hour show, so we definitely appreciate you guys out there. Larry Schechter joining us tonight, too, as well. William Del Pilar with a nice
couple of stories
showed up, like a little cameo. We discussed the AFC West, so now it's time to do our early predictions here. If the season started today, Joe, who do you got taking the division? Let's see who you got in the rankings here, all four teams.
I mean, it's been like a decade of like the Chiefs winning the division. I mean, you got to stick with the Chiefs. I don't think there's a team yet that can rival them. You know, haven't even been able to outsmart them. And think about it. It's a long season. So the Chiefs are more equipped for it so far. They've proven it in 2 years, you know, 2 years straight. So Chiefs got to be number one for sure.
Okay.
After that, the second part of it is basically up for grabs. I mean, it really is. So, I mean, if I have to pick based on the uncertainty of quarterbacks for Denver, based on the Chargers and how physical they're going to be, they're going to look to run the football. I got to say, like, the Raiders, though, the Raiders, to me, they're going to be more balanced. I really feel like Aiden O'Connell is going to be so much better than he was in the second half of the year, and he was already pretty good. With all the weaponry that they have, the defense looks pretty solid. They usually don't have problems with injuries or at least to major players. So I think I'm going to go with the Raiders second. I think I'm going to go the Chargers third, and then I'm going to go Denver last.
All right. There you go. That's a good pick setup right there. I like that. But I think I'm going to go – sometimes we do the same exact, but I'm going to go a little different here. I'm going to go with the Chiefs, obviously, again, because until you can prove them wrong, I'm going to stick with them. I like what the Raiders are doing, but again, I'd like to see what happens with that quarterback situation, so I'm not sure.
I already know.
I know. I understand that, but how well is Aiden O'Connell going to play, though? You know, if he does play better and improve, that would be nice.
But 9 touchdowns, 1 interception.
I trust more in Justin Herbert here, too, and I'm interested to see what Jim Harbaugh will do with this offense. So I'm going to go see if he can bring it back, and I'm going to go with the Chargers second here. They show themselves coming back a little bit. Then I'm going to go with your Raiders. Then finally, the Denver Broncos here. So a little different here, but again, we've talked about it. It's early right now, ladies and gentlemen. It is early.
Is it early?
Yeah, so we're excited that camps are getting started. We're going to start to hear some more news flow out with what's going on, more storylines, more contract talks. We're seeing the extensions falling into play. Some
negotiations talks, being had.
Holdouts, you know, happening now. We're hearing about CeeDee Lamb.
Hassan Reddick.
Hassan Reddick.
Let's talk about Hassan Reddick real quick.
Yes, why not?
On how the Jets traded for him, and Hassan Reddick is holding out and wants to be paid. Get this. He wants to get paid around $25 million a year. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know, Hassan, have you checked your age?
Somewhere between $700 billion and $1.3 trillion.
Exactly. Like you're in the 30 range. Like, you're at the end of your career. Like, don't get me wrong, still a good player, but, dude, all the Jets want, they want you to come in, play out this season, and then revisit it. So if you prove to the Jets that you can get 12, 14 sacks, now you can talk the big money. Now you can kind of get that extension, that big deal, for 2 or 3 years or whatever. But the fact that you are not even after the trade from the Eagles, you're not even willing to show up to the facility. Mm-hmm. You're not even ready to do some training camp practice to at least show good faith. I gotta tell you, like, it's a little absurd for you to go to a new team, not be willing to show up, and now you're demanding a lot more money than what you're getting paid.
Yeah, exactly. And which a lot of people think he's on the downward turn. So I mean,
right.
So
why do you think the Eagles are gonna let him go?
Yeah, I'm like, and that's the funny thing about some of these players. You know, I get it. You're gonna try and make as much as you can. I get that. But sometimes you got to look at perspective of where you really are in your career right now and what it is, and not the right thing to do, man.
No.
I don't get this. I think this Hassan Reddick is really barking up the wrong tree on this one with the Jets.
One other thing that we have to do, and we didn't do it last week, is we didn't pick the division winners for AFC South.
I thought about that because we looked back at the
– I think we need to document it now and pick the AFC South.
Okay. Why not?
So I'm gonna do this.
I don't have graphics. We're just gonna say it though.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Texans number one.
Okay.
Because I just think that they got so much better, and they were already good last year. I'm gonna go. This is a tough one now. I'm gonna go with Tennessee second, and then I'm gonna go Colts third and Jags last. That's what I'm
going
to do.
Okay. I am going to go with Texans first. Then I like the offensive coordinator here for the Texans or the Titans, but I'm not sure where they're going to go. So I think they're a little further behind. So I'm going to go with the Jags bounce back, and then we'll go with the Colts, and then the Titans. Why not?
Blasphemy.
Yes. We'll see what happens. it's early, right? Listen, Joe?
Yeah, you know what's
funny?
We
got a free pass.
That's right. You know what's funny, though, is everybody is entitled to their opinion, right?
Yeah.
But, like, how convinced we are when we make up our minds. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like, you know, I got the Raiders second, you got the Raiders third, when it comes to when you're looking at it from an NFL perspective and you're trying to predict on how they're going to play, one.
Right.
Two, are they going to stay healthy?
Right.
Three, is the team better than last year? Mm-hmm. And you put that together and we come up with our decisions and our opinions about them. But it's like then at the end of the year, we look back and we're like, yep, we were all wrong.
All wrong. There you go. Yep.
All right, everybody. Yeah. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Thanks.
Before we take off, I think Mike Tacky has a comment.
Oh, he does. He has another comment. Let's go.
There he goes. Did anybody ask Taylor Swift and her Swifties what they thought? Come on, guys. We need to do better. Oh, my God.
No, we don't. We are doing better. Talking to her.
No, we're not. Yeah, I hope to see less of her this
week. We can definitely survive without her.
Yes,
it's fine. But listen, thanks guys for everybody tuning in. Thanks for the comments. Make sure you head over to YouTube, to Grumblings Media, subscribe, put the thumbs up there, drop down the comments, said that you were here. Also make sure you tune in every Tuesday night at our new time now.
That's right.
9 p.m. guys, Eastern. Make sure you tune in. There's great podcasts like ours. And I'd like to say that ours is the best overall, but we also have some pretty good ones over at grumblingsmedia.com. Head over there, check out all your political, your entertainment, your sports. There's also Buzzer Beaters is a basketball one that's over there. That's actually pretty good. If you're into NBA, that's the place to be. Also head over to rumble.com. Rumble.com, a new kind of platform that's kind of popping off right now. Make sure you, uncensored.
It's censored without getting shut down by the man.
Make sure you drop a follow there. Put a review. Let us know what you think. And anywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Google, Spotify, Pandora.
Leave a review.
That's what it's all about. Thank you guys so much. See you next week.
We'll see you guys next time.